Today's interview is with legendary actress Barbara Eden. Now, Barbara has spoken extensively in the past about her work on I Dream of Jeannie, so my interest today is to learn more about her journey as a fellow female in Hollywood. Now, to all of you watching and listening, thank you so much for making Conversations the number one new show on iTunes. Please continue to rate each episode, subscribe to our channel on iTunes and YouTube, and please tell all your friends about us as we have many more conversations to bring you. But for now, I hope you enjoy this one.
My guest today is a legendary singer, actress, and classic Hollywood star who starred in movies and TV shows alongside the likes of Elvis Presley, Paul Newman, Clint Eastwood, Larry Hagman, Lucille Ball, and countless others. Her iconic role in the sitcom I Dream of Jeannie showed not only her beauty, but also her range as a comedic actress. As far as beauty goes, she is not merely one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood. She is, in my opinion, the most beautiful woman in the entire history of television. Her sense of decency and strength match her beauty as she refused to succumb to shortcuts. Hers is the story of a nice girl with incredible looks and talent who maintained her values in a male-dominated industry that was more chauvinistic than even today. I'm Maria Menounos, and this is my conversation with Barbara Eden.
You're listening to Conversations with Maria Menounos, a one-on-one, in-depth interview series with today's biggest stars and social influencers. And now, your host, Maria Menounos.
For joining me.
Well, I'm so happy to be here.
So, in your autobiography, Jeannie Out of the Bottle, you talk about being born from a strong line of women. Tell me what a strong woman is to you.
Ah, well, I didn't mean muscles. I guess I could start with my grandmother's mother, who came to San Francisco in a covered wagon. When she was 4 years old, was orphaned in San Francisco, and raised in an orphanage, became a teacher. She had 10 children, I believe. 4 of them were daughters. She made sure that all her daughters were educated. She was a teacher herself, so she made sure. And at that time, in the 1800s, the only job open to women was being a teacher. Mm-hmm. So, she made sure all her girls were educated, which was unusual at that time. I don't know what the boys did.
That's amazing.
Yes, she did. She told my grandmother, who indeed told my mother, always be able to work, to know something, so that you can have your own money and save it. You don't have to let your husband know, because someday he may need it.
That's so funny. I sneakily save money from Kevin, too.
Do you really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, and it's not sneaky anymore. Now he knows.
I know. Well, I can't lie to him, so I do it for a little while, and then I have to confess. And so, but it's true. Did you ever do that?
No, actually, I didn't. I never did. But I've always worked, and I always knew that my husband was working, and we were thrifty, very thrifty. She believed you should always have a cushion, mm-hmm. and a woman should not be dependent, you know, upon a man. Otherwise, you're in deep
trouble.
Did you adopt those same principles?
I've always worked.
Yeah.
I have always felt better and safer working. And also, don't you think it does, your value is yourself. Mm-hmm. Your self-esteem is very important. And how can you have self-esteem if you aren't contributing? That's how I feel, anyway.
Yeah. So with all of the money you made in your career, were you ever flashy? Did you ever buy anything fun for yourself?
Oh, I think I bought a lot of fun things for myself.
So you weren't too thrifty?
Sure, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No, but we weren't wild.
You know. Got it. You know, your first Hollywood residence was the famous Hollywood Studio Club, which was a nonprofit residence. And it housed the likes of Marilyn Monroe, Rita Moreno, Sally Struthers, Sharon Tate, among others.
Kim Novak.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about that experience for you.
It was the most wonderful thing. I wish it was still there. I guess they feel in this age of permissiveness it isn't necessary anymore. But it was such a safe place to stay. We knew that we had two meals a day. We did pay rent, but very little, you know. Our room was cleaned every week. We had messages taken. This is before cell phones and things, so the agents could call us and leave a message. The doors were locked at midnight. You had to be in by midnight unless you let the woman on the desk know that you would be a little later or that you would be spending the night with a girlfriend or whoever and left a phone number as to where you were. And I don't think that's so bad. I think it's great.
Now, Mary Pickford was the one who started this.
Yes, she was.
Did you ever speak to her?
I never spoke to her, but I saw her several times at the Studio Club, yes.
Was that? I think that's so amazing that she wanted to help other women. I mean, that's a rare thing, I feel like.
Professional women, women in yeah. her field. That's what she felt. She felt that the actresses, the secretaries in these studios should have help. And I am very grateful for it. It was wonderful for me. When I first came to the Studio Club, I had a job. I've always had a job.
Mm-hmm.
Working in a bank at night. And, of course, because I worked in a bank at night, I would come home after midnight. Yeah. And they knew that. They knew that. It was didn't last too long.
So it kind of gave you a great place to you know, live and jump off from in this town.
Not only that, it was a place where you could exchange ideas and you knew where auditions were going on or calls.
And there wasn't any competitiveness with all the women there?
Well, I'm sure there was. Yeah. I'm sure there was. I don't remember. I don't think, you know, sometimes you don't recognize it.
Yeah.
Not that I know of. It was all just, there was a board, and sometimes jobs would be punched up on the board, and you would go. My roommate and I quite often went on the same interviews, and one time, she was just a darling brunette, also Barbara. And we went on the interview, and it was a movie at Columbia. We were only, you know, getting walk-ons and two or three lines. I think this part had six lines in it. And they read both of us, and then they found out we were roommates, and they said, well, why don't we just make it two girls and give each one three lines? So that's what we did. We had a wonderful time. Yeah, we worked.
I want to talk about your first big Hollywood meeting, because I know it was with a casting director at Warner Brothers. And when you first met him, and I have it written down here, he takes a picture of his daughter and says, this is straight from your book, see, honey, that's what you need, big tits.
No, this is what they want.
And then he told you, you're not pretty enough and not tough enough.
Yeah.
And to go back to San Francisco and marry the boy next door as fast as you can. What in the world was he thinking? Why did he have such a quick preconceived notion of you?
Well, I guess I wasn't, at that time, what he said, the Hollywood type. I wasn't the type. He said, you're a very nice little girl from a nice family. He said, you're pretty, but you're not pretty enough. And he said, honey, here, this is what they want, big tits. He's talking about his daughter, you know. And believe me, in those days, I didn't even say that word. We didn't say tits.
Yeah.
No. Hardly admitted we had them. You know, it was just,
yeah.
And I just, I was just taken aback. I didn't know what to say to him or what to do or anything. I went out to the car. My uncle had driven me. I didn't know how to drive then. I didn't live in L.A. at the time,
mm-hmm.
And I told my uncle, but went on, and he was ready to get out of the car, go in, and talk to the man. Oh, dear. the wonderful thing about this story is that 6 months later, mm-hmm. I learned how to drive. I had moved into the studio club, and I had agreed to do a little test scene with an actor. And because of that, we were rehearsing on the Warner Brothers lot. And one day, the man who was rehearsing us was head of talent there. Mm-hmm. And he told me, just keep coming back for the lessons, for the talent lessons, you know, at his class. And I did. And I was walking in slacks, pants, you know, and I heard, hey, you. And I didn't pay any attention. I just kept walking. First of all, I knew I didn't belong there. I wasn't under contract. I shouldn't have been on the lot, you know, at all. Hey, you in the yellow pants. Well, that I had to acknowledge that. I turned around and I looked, and there he was.
The same guy.
The same man, yes. And he said, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing here? I said, I'm seeing, the casting, the coach. And he said, are you under contract here? I said, no. He said, we're going to test you. Yeah. Can you believe the same man that said I wasn't what they wanted
now wants you again?
I don't know why.
Did you hear my intro? I said, and this is my opinion, but I searched online with my boyfriend all night last night. We were like, let's find someone more beautiful than her.
Oh, dear.
And we did. And we searched and we searched and we searched. And we're like, no, can't find anybody current or past or in between. And it just baffles me that this man would have the audacity to say that to you. Okay, the breast thing could be, you know, whatever. Maybe at the time that was something that was, you know, in his mind. But your beauty was completely unchallengeable. And then to just tell someone to pack up and go, that's the worst thing you could ever say to someone, because someone will always bite you in the butt back. Once you tell them that they can't do it, you never know which one's going to rise above. I just said that, and of course,
rise above.
That's what you talk about in your book, Rise Above. But what made you not want to go back home? Like, what made you continue? Because after that, you went on an audition spree, and you were, like, determined.
Well, I thought, okay, I'm not pretty. But I know I'm good.
But did you believe that?
Yeah, I did.
You didn't believe you were pretty?
No, and actually, most of my work has been comedy. It hasn't been pretty girl.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jeannie was glamorous and pretty, so that's what people think I'm pretty. I don't think so. I'm a comedian, and I really do my best work when I'm funny, when you give me a part where I can be funny.
But you can be funny and gorgeous.
Well,
that's what you are.
I guess. The point is, when he was talking to me, I was crushed. I was crushed. But I went home and I thought, he didn't ask me where I'd studied. He didn't ask me if I'd done anything. I was a member of Actors Equity at that time. I had done stage work. He didn't ask me about it. You know, he didn't. And I thought, what is he doing? It's just surface here. Mm-hmm. You don't care about people acting or doing their craft. So I thought, okay, I'll be a character actor. That's all. And actually, that's what I think most of us are. We're character actors. We take what a writer has written. Mm-hmm. I'm not what the writer is. I'm not Jeannie. I'm not Loco in How to Marry a Millionaire. But I could become her because the writer gave me the words and the situations to act like her. But I couldn't do what you're doing because you are Maria Menounos, and you are being Maria Menounos beautifully and
you.
With conviction and strength. But I couldn't do that. I need to know what I'm saying. I need to have those words.
Well, I couldn't do what you did. Well, I was watching old episodes last night, and my God, you're just, I mean, you're so amazing, and I don't think you were celebrated enough for your comedic genius. You were so freaking cute and just adorable, and you just exploded off that screen. I don't think the show was celebrated enough either.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I had a good time doing it. You know, she's a once-in-a-lifetime character. You can do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, she just was irrepressible. So I loved it. I loved it. She did everything I couldn't do in real life.
You know? In a blink of an eye.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
I want to talk to you about Ciro's right now.
No.
Ciro's. You landed a gig performing at the legendary Hollywood nightclub Ciro's, where Brando and Sinatra and Sammy Davis, all those guys hung out. I want you to explain a little bit about that world, because I was trying to think of anything current day that would be even comparable, but there aren't those performances anymore like that. I mean, we have Soho House, and a lot of celebrities will be at the Soho House, but this was different.
Well, this was a supper club. Mm-hmm. And I actually, the way I got the job, I was coming home from the bank at the studio club. It was the best thing and the most horrible thing that could ever happen to me, but I'm glad it happened because it got me out of the bank.
Ciro's.
Yes. And as I was going up the stairs, a very beautiful brunette girl was coming down, and she said, "Hi, what's your name?" And I said, "Barbara." And she told me her name. And she said, "What are you coming in so late for?" I said, "Oh, I was working." She said, "Oh, what do you do?" I said, "I work in a bank." She said, "A bank?" She said, "Why are you here?" I said, "Because I'm an actress." She said, "Well, then why are you working in a bank?" I mean, she was quite positive. I said, "Because I want to eat." You know. She said, "Well, why don't you come up to Ciro's and audition for one of the dancers?" And I said, "I don't dance. I act. I can sing a little, but I don't dance." She said, "Oh, that's all right. None of us do." Like that. None of them were dancers. So I said, "Okay." So I went up, and she said, "Bring high heels." So in my short shorts and my high heels, I got the job. I was terrified. I was just terrified. Because, you know, a dancer, your body has memory if you're a dancer. Have you studied dancing?
I never had, but I did Dancing with the Stars, and so I now know what that's like.
Yes. If you know, a dancer's trained, their body knows what to do. I didn't know. I could not remember the steps. I'm musical, but not... That was horrible. And the girls were so mean. Oh, my God, were they mean.
Tell me about that. Oh. I heard they locked you in a closet.
Closet? They locked me in the toilet.
Oh, it was the bathroom.
Yes,
okay,
was the bathroom. It was the bathroom. And I couldn't get out.
What were the circumstances around that? Why did they do that? I have no idea.
Well, they...
Jealous?
They called me... The Little Virgin is what they called me.
They were jealous.
And I had a song that I was supposed to end this dance with. And obviously I didn't get on stage in time to do the song because I was locked in the... Oh! And crying. That was horrible. Horrible.
How long were you in there?
I guess it must have been at least 15 minutes.
Wow.
Enough to make me late on stage.
Did you get into trouble?
Almost. Then they found out I was locked. And, you know, no, I didn't get into trouble.
So what happened after that? Did you confront the women?
No.
What did you do?
No, what could I do? What could I say? It was done. It was fait accompli. It was done. I wasn't going to get into a cat fight with anyone, especially them.
Did you have to just keep going back after that? Did they try to do other things to you?
I did, but actually I didn't last that long. Mm. A week or so later, I mean, they acted like nothing happened. Funny joke. Really funny joke.
Yeah.
But about a week later, they had to delete two girls from the dance line. And I was one of the two. So it was good. It was
Fate
good.
Fate stepped in.
Yeah, because then I started to work. And that's when I auditioned for the Johnny Carson show and got it. And things just started. That was good.
So, it's funny because where they all are now, I wonder. You know, did any of them ever have any success that you noticed?
Not that I know of. I know the girl that got me the job. Yes, I do. I know her. I see her. I know. I won't say because...
Oh, she. You know one of them that locked you in the closet, in the bathroom.
Yeah, she's the one that got me the job at Ciro's, yeah.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Oh, so then she was regretting it.
I don't think so. I don't think so at all.
She just wanted to torture you.
No, I don't know. I don't know what it was. I don't think it was that. I don't think it was anything personal. I just think it was a mob mentality and he, wouldn't this be fun? And she can't take it kind of thing. That's all. Yeah. You know.
But you did.
Yeah.
Let's talk about men in Hollywood, because from this point, you started booking more gigs in Hollywood. I want to talk about some of the famous men you came across in your journey. First, we'll talk about Johnny Carson, who you just mentioned, because he was your big break. How many episodes did you do with Johnny Carson? Do you remember?
I believe I did 6.
Okay. Yeah. What was he like?
He was darling. I don't want to color my opinion. I've known him through the years. Mm-hmm. but at that time, he was just very sweet and very concerned about his show. And his timing was fabulous. And mm-hmm. we worked well together in the sketches. I don't know if I told you how I got the job. That's more interesting than working with Johnny.
I love this story. So tell it for everyone who hasn't seen it, because I thought it was great.
I had, my agent said, Barbara, they are auditioning girls at CBS for the live audience. You've had stage work, so I think you should go and audition, but wear a sexy dress. Mm-hmm. Because they want a sexy blonde. I said, okay. It was a very, very cold day, very cold. And I had a white coat over my little spaghetti strap sheath. And I parked in the lot. It was cold. I walked into CBS. It was like an ice box. It was so cold. So I kept my coat on, got in the elevator, went up to the 3rd floor, I think it was, got out. It was still cold. And they ushered me right away into the office. Well, there I was with my coat on. And I just didn't feel like I could take it off at that point. It was like, ta-da, kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I left it on, talked to the man, told him, you know, my work. And he said, thank you very much. And that was the end of it. And when I got to the studio club, Wilt, who was my agent, called and said, tell me what you did, Barbara. He said, because you should have gotten that. And I told him, I said, I couldn't take my coat off, Will. I just couldn't get it off. So the very next week, they again had a call, because Johnny liked to work with a girl. And so I wore the same dress. I got into the parking lot, got out of my car, took the coat off, put it on my arm, and walked in there, freezing, just freezing. Talked to the director. This time he talked to me and asked me what my background was, and I told him I studied at the Conservatory of Music in San Francisco and blah, 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 you know. And he said, thank you very much. I walked out, and I thought, okay, that's it. I didn't get the job again. And there were some men around the water fountain, and one of them detached and took my arm. And he said, you don't mind, do you? And I said, no, I don't mind. He said, were you in Johnny Carson's office? I said, yes, I was. He said, did you get the job? He said, nope, I don't think so. And he went, and he turned around. I left, and then I did get the job. And he was Nat Perrin, actually. He produced something I did later, and he was producing Johnny's show. And then after the first show that I did with Johnny, the director came over and apologized to me, because he said, I didn't think anyone who spoke in an intelligent manner or could sing or who had studied and appeared in the plays you've appeared in could possibly be a dumb blonde who could sing off key. Well, you know.
Yeah, but I love that story, because had you just been like, you know, someone else, just not no time for somebody and just like rushed on out, you would have never had that situation. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
It's and so
fate.
I know in the book you talk about your relationship with Johnny Carson at some point getting a little cold. Why do you think? I mean, obviously, I know he invited you back to, he invited you to dinner at his hotel, was it?
Well, we were both appearing in Las Vegas doing our acts, but you see, singers can't do what people who just talk can do. I was scared to death I was going to catch a cold, and Vegas, I don't know if it's, Vegas throat is just horrible because the air is so dry up there. You sleep with steamers on. Talk about curly hair. I'd wake up every morning with curly hair. But I didn't, between shows, I didn't go out. I think the only person I went out and had anything to eat with was Elvis. But he was also concerned. I mean, we were careful. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to someone's pool and jumping around and screaming. And Johnny wanted me to come over, actually, for lunch and go swimming. And I couldn't do it. But I don't think he understood. Mm. He just thought I was being rude, I think. I just didn't understand, you know.
Yeah. And so then from there on, did you see him again after?
I did, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same.
And there's nothing you can do to explain it at that point either.
No. And he just didn't know.
Let's talk about Orson Welles.
Oh,
you
my.
You say your meeting with him was electric.
It was. He and Bill Clinton have the same aura, the same magnetism.
Uh-huh.
I walked into that room, and it just hit me like a brick wall. The strength and the aura and, of course, the voice, his voice. And here he was, at that time in his life, he wasn't too attractive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, very heavy. But my goodness, he had something magnetic. Wonderful, wonderful. I was so happy that I met him. Didn't work with him, but I did have that experience.
What about Elvis? You say he was a sweet guy. You guys starred in Flaming Star, obviously.
Yeah.
Tell me about Elvis.
Oh, he was a dear. He was just a dear. And very, very earnest. He wanted to be an actor. He wanted to do well. He talked to me about a lot of things. I think I've told you about the girl that he was in love with that he finally married. But he also would talk about the colonel. You know, he'd say, you know, people say I shouldn't be with the colonel, but he said, if it wasn't for the colonel, I'd still be singing in those little places and...
Yeah.
You know, in Kentucky or wherever, you know, Tennessee, for 2 bits. So he said, I can't get rid of the colonel.
What did you think of that?
I don't think I thought anything about that.
Because he's right. He's right in a sense. And there's obviously something to, you know, it's
sure.
admirable he was loyal, but...
Yes, but I didn't really think... How can you judge something... That's happening. In retrospect, of course, I could judge it. But at that point, it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
He was working. He was doing a wonderful part in this movie. He went on to do some awful movies, but sold a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, sold a lot of tickets. Our film didn't sell too many. It was a good film, got good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
He played a half-breed who didn't get the girl, didn't sing. And died. His fans didn't want that.
Yeah.
They wanted the popcorn and candy and, you know, the so of course that's what the colonel put him in after that. He didn't have to do that though. He could have been really, really wonderful and on film.
Yeah. What was your last, I know you saw him one last time before he passed away. Tell me about the last time you saw Elvis. And what you felt.
Well, I saw him in Las Vegas, and he was wonderful. He was electric. He was fabulous. I did not see him when he was that and really down and out, but I did follow him in a venue in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to have a cold at that time, and, you know, singers, you get a cold, you go, and immediately find me a doctor.
Yeah.
And they did. And the man gave me a shot and gave me some antibiotics, and the cold was gone like that. And the man who'd sent me to the doctor said, don't ever go back to him again. He said, this is a one-time thing. And I said, why? He said, because you don't want those shots. He said, Elvis was here just before you, and he said he was a mess. He was a mess. He said, I was there with him when he got the shot. And it said his bottom looked like leather from so many needle marks. So I don't know what the shot was. I assumed it was cortisone, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
It would have been something else. But he just had people staring him in the wrong way. He loved to sing. He loved to entertain. It was his life. And I think if someone told him he had to do something in order to sing, he'd probably do it.
Yeah.
You know, without thinking about the consequences. And I think his dad was gone. By then, his mother was gone. He had no one. Wrong people.
When you heard about his passing, were you surprised?
I was surprised. I was very surprised, yeah. But, you know, everything's in retrospect now, you know. At the time, I was shocked. Yes. But aren't you always, when someone passes that you know very well and you know they're ill, but you're still shocked
mm-hmm.
when they transcend? You say, well, what happened? doesn't happen.
Yeah, always.
Mm-hmm.
JFK.
Oh, yeah.
I love this story. Again, you're just like Teflon. No one can get you. I love that about you.
Well, I was very young and naive, truly naive. And that was when I was doing How to Marry a Millionaire. And the three girls, the three of us, were sent to New York in rented fur coats because we didn't have a fur coat. And I believe it was on our way home that I was at the airport. And I was at the candy counter and before I got on the plane. And a man came over to me and said, who are you? Who are you? And I looked at him and said, Barbara Eden. He said, who are you with? And I said, 20th Century Fox. I don't know what else to say at the time. He said, no, somebody's with you here. Who is it? And I said, and I introduced the PR guy who was with us. And I didn't introduce, I said, he's over there. And I went back to buying my candy. And then our PR guy came over to me and said, Barbara, would you like to meet Senator Kennedy? Who? I didn't know who he was. Yeah. I had no idea. I said, I guess so. So we went in this little private room. And the man who had approached me at the candy counter came over in a like he was on a stage. I want you to meet the next president of the United States. That's how I was introduced to him.
In the airport?
Yeah. And I said, how do you do? I didn't know what to say. It was so, and he said, hello. And we maybe spoke, I don't know about what, but three sentences. And that was it.
Not really, though.
Oh, no, well, then. Yeah, I was getting on the plane. I put my hand in my pocket, and there was a little paper with his phone number.
So, and you tore it up?
Yeah, I tore it up.
Okay, so this is what is so interesting to me. You're introduced to someone who potentially could be the next president of the United States, according to some crazy man who's screaming in the airport. Wouldn't you, I'm surprised that you wouldn't want to maybe keep the connection, try to keep up some kind of relationship. What made you want to tear it up and completely omit it? Did you think he had bad intentions and you just wanted to stop it in its tracks or just not interested?
No, just not interested, really.
Yeah.
Not interested at all. And also, I had a rule.
Uh-huh. Tell.
Girls don't call boys.
Got it.
They call the girl.
Got it.
So I don't care who it was. I wouldn't have called at that stage in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just wouldn't have called.
That's so funny.
But I didn't. Also, I didn't know. I was very naive. I didn't know who he was.
How old were you when you met him?
I must have been, what, 20?
Yeah.
21, something like that.
Yeah.
Nowadays, that's not naive, but then it was.
Yeah, well, it is so young. Paul Newman,
You made a movie with Paul Newman called From the Terrace, and you wrote that you might have been seriously tempted by him. This was exciting.
Well, he was just darling and so sweet to me because it was really my first big film I'd ever done. I had done a couple of films at Fox, but this was Mark Robeson. Incidentally, Mark Robeson, who had brought me to Fox in the first place. He'd seen me in a play and brought me to Fox. And so I was very, very nervous and wanted to do it right, you know, really wanted to be right. And I asked I asked Paul, I said, well, how do you think I should play this? He said, just do it. He's the wisest words an actor could ever hear. Just do it. And so we rehearsed it a few times, and I did it. It was a dance scene with him. And he said, well, it's the first time I've been able to look down on an actress. I'm usually looking up. Because he was short.
How short was he?
Well, he didn't
say. Or how tall was he?
How tall he was. I would guess 5'8".
Yeah.
He didn't seem short to me,
but
his wife was a lot taller. Joanne was a lot taller than he, you know. He was lovely. He had a twinkle in his eye, very sweet.
What was your favorite Paul Newman film?
Oh, boy. Name a film. They're all my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he did a bad film. Even as he got older, he was just better and better.
So
you know, I
handsome.
Met him. I went to the racetrack. I don't know. I went there because my husband watches them on television all the time, and I was invited. And he said, "Oh, we've got to go. We've got to go." So we went, and Mario Andretti had invited us, and his daddy, of course, was doing the. I don't know all the vernacular of the
race world.
Yeah. But Paul was there, and this was not too long before he passed. And we were standing there, and I didn't know what to say. They were taking photos of us, you know, standing side by side. And finally I said, it's good to see you again. You know, I worked with you once. And he said, I remember. Like that, I remember. But he, you know, he was notoriously private, Paul. He didn't... So I didn't know whether to tell him. I didn't know, gee, you know, I did a movie with you and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
but he was very sweet.
And handsome.
Very sweet, yes.
Oh, my God.
Those blue eyes, wow.
I mean, honestly. Yeah. So out of all the men, you would say that he's the one that was the most tempting?
Yeah, I think so. yes.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know if I would have been able to say no or not be tempted by Paul Newman. You know, I want to talk a little bit about women in Hollywood because we've spoken so much about men in Hollywood. And, you know, Hollywood, I've experienced definitely the whole boys club thing in this town. And I know it was way worse, you know, when you were coming up as well. But at the same time, women were our worst enemies, I think. So now we've got the boys club and then we've got women against us. And so I feel like, you know, we're so left to be vulnerable and really have to just fight our way through somehow, where it could be such a more enjoyable journey. It's such a difficult journey for women, and we're making it harder on each other rather than being supportive. And there were a few exceptions, and we'll obviously talk about them, you know, throughout this. But, you know, I know you had so many run-ins with Hollywood females that weren't positive.
Actually, I didn't. I only had one.
Anne?
One.
Anne Southern?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah. But it was early on. I think it was my second job. My second film job. And it came through the studio club. And I was so excited to be working with her because I was such a fan. So cute, Anne Southern, you know. And so I was all made up and ready and for the part. I think I had 5 lines. It wasn't a big deal part. And she walked out of her dressing room and then marched over to me, literally marched, and with her maid in back, and I mean a maid, with a little hat and a little apron and a black coat.
Oh, like legit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in back, and I thought, oh, wow. Wow, Hollywood star, you know, yeah. Coming over. She came over just close to me. Did that. Turned around and walked away. I mean, it was not a word or anything. And I thought, wow, what was that all about? And then the makeup man said, come here, Barbara, we have to make a few changes.
I've heard that one.
Makeup, yeah, yeah. And
you need to change your wardrobe, make you look a little dowdy.
Yeah.
Let's mess up the hair. I've had that happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can, you know, in retrospect, I understand.
I know, me too, but it's still not
because
right.
Because the part I was... They cast me wrong. I was way too young to be playing a hard-bitten newspaper woman. That's what it was supposed to be doing.
Uh-huh.
And she just took one look at me and thought, what did they do? But she wasn't very kind about it.
Mm.
You know, she could have said, you're miscast. I'm sorry. This is not good. But she didn't. But what she did was when I got on the set, I had no rehearsal. I wasn't lit. And everything was on my back. Which I didn't care. I was so happy to have that check, you know, at that time. But it was unnecessarily mean. She didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There could have been some explanation.
And how sad, because you loved her so much. I've had that happen where I've gotten to work with someone who I idolized and held in such high regard and just admired them so much. And then you see... who they are up close and they completely crush you and you're like, oh, but I'm not after your job. I just love you and I think you're amazing and why would you view me as a threat? And, you know, I'm sure, what was the age difference between you and Anne at that time?
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea. But I think, you know, also it was her last show. She was tired. She'd been doing television, as you know, it's very demanding. And I think she was just, she'd had it.
Yeah.
She didn't care. She didn't care about anybody else. You know, she just wanted to get it done.
Yeah. Well, you say she's the only one, but I know Katharine Hepburn and Lauren Bacall weren't very nice.
Oh, well, that's different, though. I wasn't working with them.
But but they were still catty and not nice, right?
Dismissive.
Dismissive.
Dismissive. I think that's it, yeah. Dismissive. But not... it wasn't Katharine Hepburn. I kind of giggled because I knew from reading about her, even reading her book, she liked men. She didn't care about women at all, you know. And I happened to go backstage to we'd seen her in a. My date for that evening was an Englishman, very tall, white hair, good looking man. A friend, not a boyfriend, just a friend of mine. And he wanted to go back and meet her. And I said, all right, let's go back and acknowledge her performance. And we did. And unfortunately, I was wearing a bright red dress with knife pleats, bright red high-heeled shoes with little ankle straps.
Looking hot.
And curly blonde hair, you know.
Isn't that so sad that you have to say, unfortunately, I looked amazing?
Well, it isn't that. It's just that I looked a little shallow, probably, to her. And so she didn't even acknowledge me. Talk to him, you know, a lot. But I understood it. I understood that. I didn't care about that. Lauren, I had been sent to see the film because she was doing Woman of the Year, and not the film, the play, and she was talking about bowing out. So they asked if I'd be interested in doing it, and I said, yeah. And I did do it later, but at this time I sat there and saw it, and then I went backstage and met her, and I should never have gone backstage to meet her.
Yeah.
Because that did it. And she's a big woman.
Yeah?
Wow, yeah. Yeah. Wonderful in that part because of it. Yeah, very strong. But I didn't, you know, I didn't, she stayed in.
Oh, yeah, she was like, on second thought, I will be staying. Because you never want to get replaced, especially when you have to look at who's replacing you.
Yeah, well, Raquel Welch did it. on Broadway, she replaced her. Yeah, interesting.
This one I love, this story of Lucille Ball, because you booked a role on the I Love Lucy show. And Lucy obviously was different than probably most women in Hollywood. I mean, she's mm-hmm. just exceptional, obviously. But tell me about your experience on that show, because I know you have a great story, obviously, to tell from that.
Well, it was right after working with Anne. And so when I got the job and I went to rehearsal, I talked to myself. I talked to myself a lot, actually. I say I'm talking to my dog, but I'm really talking to me. And I said, okay, now, you're going to do your job. Not going to let it be personal. Whatever it is, it's not personal. 9 times out of 10, it isn't personal.
Yeah.
When these people are mean or nasty, it's not. They're just unhappy people. So I thought, well, and I also was very aware that her husband was, you know, a Lothario. I just knew it. It was yeah. Everyone in town knew it. So I walked in and I kept my nose clean and did my rehearsals and rehearsed with her, didn't fool around, avoided Desi a lot. Yeah. I had black belt and hiding behind the sets.
So he was chasing you around looking for you and you just were dodging.
I just wasn't there. Wasn't there, except when we were rehearsing.
So you were Jeannie before you were Jeannie. You were blinking yourself out of it.
And then came dress rehearsal, and I put the dress on that they had given me to wear. And Lucy was in her dressing room, and she stuck her head out. And she said, Barbara, come here a minute. And I went over. She said, you like that dress? And I said, mm-hmm, yes. I wasn't going to say I didn't like anything. She said, take it off. So I went back, thought, oh, here we go. I took the dress off.
Did you think she was going to put you in something ugly?
I had no idea. I had no idea. But I knew it was, you know.
You were scared.
Mm. And she took the dress. She and her assistant, or the wardrobe person, I'm not sure who it was, sat there during rehearsals, putting those sparkly things, you know how you punch them
yeah,
on?
Yeah, bedazzling.
I guess. They didn't call it that then, but it was, you know, you punched all those sparkles. Did it all over my dress to make it prettier, to make it stand out. And I couldn't believe it. Now, it was enough that she had someone else do it, but to do it herself.
Mm-hmm. She was that involved in that
show.
Oh,
yes. Oh, yes.
But also, your role on that episode was one where Desi needed to want you. Mm-hmm. And even though she had been hurt so much by other women that had come in and out of their lives, whether it be on the show or off the show, and all these women that were cheating with Desi, and Lucy had to bear the brunt of all of that, she still, even with all of that, wanted you to look your best so that you could be the best for that part. She really cared about the overall show more than anything, it sounded like.
Yeah, she did. She was wise. She was very wise. And I just loved working with her. It was a great, great experience.
So, Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
Of course, this was so fascinating. I mean, when you're reading this book and you're hearing about Elvis and all these, you know, all of these people, it's interesting. But you and Marilyn shared the same stand-in. Was it Evie or Evie?
Evie.
And that's how you and Marilyn both met. And I know she confided in you a lot because she trusted you. What did she confide in you about Marilyn? I mean, did she...
Evie?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Evelyn Moriarty was her name. And she was my stand-in for How to Marry a Millionaire. This was years before she was a stand-in for Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the years as I did film, and Marilyn was doing a lot of film, Evie would work with both of us. But this one time, I think it was Marilyn's last film, actually, Evie said, I have to leave you. Now, Evie was blonde, had big brown eyes. She had been a real go-getter in Hollywood in her day. Evelyn Moriarty. And I don't know where she was from, but she had actually... Is Barbara? Barbara, I have to work with my other star. That's what she said to me. I said, Marilyn? She said, yeah, darling, I have to leave you and work with her. I'm sorry. I said, but we have 3 more weeks, you know, on the movie. She said, honey, you can do it without me. She needs me.
Yeah.
She did that like that. She needs me like this.
And it sounded like she did because she was at her end.
She did. So Evie left and I continued. But both films were being done at Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Those huge, huge sound stages. And Evie came over one day and said, Barbara, I want you to meet my other star. I said, I can't leave. I'm in this shot. She said, no, wait a minute. Now, Evie knew everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. She made it right. She said, you can leave. They said, you can leave. She took me by my hand next door to the next stage, and we walked on this huge sound stage, pitch black, except for right in the middle, a little light where they were lighting for costume and makeup. And it was Jean-Louis for the dresses, and, oh, God, what was the man from MGM who was so wonderful, who always did Marilyn's hair, was there. And they were all in suits and ties and very elegant, elegant people. And, of course, the cinematographer, and could have heard a pin drop. You also felt like you were on another planet mm-hmm. because it was so black, except for this one little thing in the middle of light, you know? And Marilyn came out of her little trailer and walked into the light, and they took the picture. She turned around. They saw the clothes she was wearing. And as she walked out, Evie said, Marilyn, I want you to meet my other star.
Jeez.
Me.
Well, you were.
Me. Her mom. I was hardly a star. So, but Marilyn was so gracious. And my God, as beautiful as she was on screen, you should have seen her in person. She was exquisite. She glowed. Her face glowed. Her hair glowed. It was like looking at a magical being. And so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so honest. And that voice is really her voice.
Yeah.
That's the way she talked. I just fell in love with her. She's just a beautiful, beautiful little person.
Was that the only time you got to see her, or
yeah.
did you see her again?
No, I didn't. No, she was gone, I think, a month later. Yeah, that was her last film.
Wow. And I know that in the book you talk about the fact that Evie had confided in you that Marilyn was afraid.
Yeah.
And that there was a green Mercedes following her, and she was getting all of these hang-up calls leading up to her death.
And no one believed her because they all thought she was nutty. You know, that she was always nervous and about one thing or another. So they, you know, it's like the little boy who calls fire too many times. You don't listen to them. It was sad. It was really sad.
But did the police ever interview her?
Evelyn?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Evie's been interviewed many times on television about it. But
why wouldn't they investigate it if Evie knew
that
Marilyn made a point to tell her she was scared?
Yeah.
You know? And there's, I don't know if you heard about it today, but there's a new book that just came out that says that Marilyn confronted Jackie. And... And so it made me wonder if Evie ever mentioned anything about Jackie.
No.
That they had any kind of exchange.
No. No, she didn't. But I don't know that Evie would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she didn't really carry tales. She would tell me how Marilyn felt.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. But didn't really name names, Evie. She's a good gal. I miss her.
You had a really poignant line, though, in the book about Evie. You said, when speaking about this, you said something about she knew what had happened, and I believed her. Something similar to that.
Yeah.
So Evie believed that the rumors of the JFK situation were true, that they had
killed her. She just knew that Marilyn would not do away with herself. She said she wouldn't do it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so sad.
Terribly sad.
I want to talk about, briefly, your amazing partnership and love and marriage with Michael, who unfortunately just passed. And, you know, obviously I'm very sorry about that. I wonder, when I look at this and I think of all the things that you had to endure on the set of, you know, I Dream of Jeannie, I know he did some guest episodes.
He appeared in three, and he directed one or two. I'm not sure. Yeah.
And I know that he was as tall as Larry, and having a very protective partner myself, I wondered if he ever tried to intimidate Larry Hagman back.
No.
No?
No. No, he wouldn't do that. No. And Larry, you know, Larry wasn't obvious, mm-hmm. you know.
They never are. They're good at it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
My inner monologue just came out. I'm sorry, but I have connected with you in this book in so many ways. And this is just another one where, you know, these men just completely have their way and they get away with it. And I don't understand how they do it. If it was you doing what he had done on that set, you would have been a diva. Am I wrong?
Well,
Or
an animal. I mean, jeez.
Yeah.
What was no woman would do that.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, caught yielding a knife at the nuns. I mean, what was he doing?
It was an axe.
An axe.
Actually, it was an axe. Yeah. The fire axe.
I mean, forget diva. I mean, you'd be locked up. How can you please just tell me how the men get away with this in this business? Their behavior is absolutely...
Well, now let's be fair. A lot of women get away with poor behavior, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Many women, too.
But if
they're wanted for a part, they keep their job. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're often rehired. That's the thing, you know. But if a studio wants somebody and doesn't want, I mean, gosh, who is this guy? There's 2.5 men.
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just think how long they kept him. Mm-hmm. But it was because of the show. And they do the same with a woman.
I don't know. I feel like with a woman, they think there's so many more pretty women. It's really little more superficial in the women.
I think it depends upon what you're doing, what part you're playing. If mm-hmm. your part is important enough, they'll put up with a lot, male or female.
Yeah.
You know, they won't get rid of them. They'll try to control the situation, lots of luck.
But, yeah.
You know, and so often it's drugs that's making the bad stuff happen. Mm-hmm. And that's sad. That's really sad because these people, for their own good, should be fired. You know, but...
Yeah. You know, you guys had such a great relationship. And what I love so much about you is that you were Teflon to all of these men that were making advances at you. And you were so happy in your marriage that you denied everyone, mm-hmm. all of these incredible, gorgeous, talented, you know, icons in this business, and you stayed loyal. What do you think it was about you that you did that, whereas you hear so many stories of infidelity and...
Well, I don't think it had anything to do with me. I think it had to do with the fact that, well, of course, it was the way I feel. If I'm interested in someone, I'm very interested in them. I really don't see anyone else. I don't care who they are or what they are, but once I've locked and loaded, that's it. And I truly am not interested in anyone else. And that's been true all my life. So it isn't, I don't know that it's, you know, that it's such a unusual feature. I think a lot of women are that way. If you are attracted to someone and your love develops, other people don't interest you.
Even Paul Newman?
Oh. Yes.
well now.
That one was tough.
That was tough.
You're like, Michael, hall pass for Paul Newman, please.
I didn't think of that.
I know, but see, I don't think people talked about hall passes back then.
No. Right?
That might have been a good negotiation. I want to talk about I Dream of Jeannie. I know I have to wrap this up, so I'm going to be as quick as I can.
Did you keep souvenirs from the set?
I kept the bottle.
Mm-hmm. And the costume, right?
Well, no.
No?
No. The costume I have was made for a Lexus commercial I did shortly after Jeannie.
A replica?
Mm-hmm. Columbia wouldn't let me have a costume. And that's so funny because they had many of them, mm-hmm. and they loaned them out to the executives' wives for Halloween. Yes.
I was a genie for Halloween once, too.
Were you? Yeah. I was, too, actually. But they never bring them back. So, consequently, when they did this commercial, they didn't have a costume left.
Wow, that so I you had to used. Get one made.
Yeah, so the car company made it.
Mm-hmm. What was the best part about being genie, and then what was the worst part?
Whee! It was fun. Genie was fun. Every bit of, I guess the worst part is getting up at 4 a.m. mm-hmm. and getting to the studio for all the body makeup and then putting that thing on my head.
Did that hurt?
Getting ready. Sometimes it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not all the time, but sometimes.
What did you do to stay in such good shape back then? Did you...
Nothing.
Not eat? I mean, you're...
I worked.
So flat.
I worked. That's all. Just worked. Well, I was always very conscious of what I ate, mm-hmm. as was Mike, so that wasn't a problem. We were conscious of our weight, but I didn't have time to go to the gym,
Yeah.
Even after baby, but it was okay. When you're young, you can do that.
Yeah, you can bounce right back.
Yeah.
You know, I know that Your time with Larry was frustrating, and I know that you guys reunited on the set of Dallas. Was he a little bit more in control of his ego at that point, you think?
Oh, indeed. Oh, my goodness, yes. Because Dallas was his show. Mm.
It became, so he was happy.
It became his show, yes.
And
yes.
Do you think that, because I was trying to piece this, I'm like an investigator. Uh-huh. I was trying to piece together why he had such a great relationship with Linda Gray. And the only thing I could think of was this was his show, so he was now comfortable.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Did you keep in touch with him over the years?
And yes, I did. And as a matter of fact, I worked with him. I did Love Letters. Mm-hmm. And we appeared at the autograph shows together. Yeah, Australia. And he was just great. Larry could be wonderful. When he was comfortable.
You know. Yeah.
I went to Germany, actually. I was brought to Germany to surprise him once at a big dinner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
And then at the end, when he got sick, were you guys in touch at all? This last, he just passed away maybe 6 months ago, 2 years ago, I remember. I had gone down to the set and visited him on the new set of
Did
Dallas.
You?
He let me wear his hat.
He did.
Yes. He said he never lets anyone wear it, so yeah. I was honored.
Yeah. You knew he was ill then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I had seen him, we'd been in Australia together, actually, just a few months before he discovered that he had the cancer. Mm-hmm. But he didn't know it in Australia. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was a shock to me. It was surprising.
Yeah. What's a normal day in Barbara Eden's life? When I was putting together my questions last night, I'm like,
day.
I want to know, does she, like, go to the supermarket? Does she go to the movies? You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, what?
Well, a normal day. I don't know about a normal day, but I'll tell you, 3 days a week I go to the gym. And that sort of takes most of the day by the time I get home and shower and, you know. But I go to Costco with my girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And we have been caught.
This girlfriend?
This one right here, yes.
Okay, you get caught there.
Oh, well, I don't know where the camera was. We have no idea. We just see it when it's printed. But there are Mary Jane and Barbara pushing the basket with these big poinsettias. You know, I get those at Christmas, those great big poinsettias that they have. And we're laughing and we're pushing the cart. I don't know. Someone must have had an iPhone and taken it. And there was another time, wasn't there, at the Osh.
And it was sent to us from Germany.
Which one?
Oh, my goodness.
The one of us in Costco.
In Costco. Oh, that's
States.
Right.
It went international.
Oh, that's right. But the one in Osh, that was... I go to a hardware store.
Barbara Eden in the hardware store.
Oh, God. I go with my husband, but usually I take a book and I sit in the car and wait.
Uh-huh.
With Mary Jane, I went in and I waited while she picked out whatever she was picking for her condominium. And yep, there's a picture
Me
looking very bored.
I would be bored, too.
In Osh.
And
there were two of them at Costco, weren't there?
Yes, and there was one. Walking Beverly Hills with friends of yours, you were shopping.
Oh, that was,
paparazzi, yeah. Robert, I get. That's where they are.
I don't know where they are, though.
So, okay, so normal day, you will go to, you know, stores and stuff, but what do you watch on TV now? Do you watch reality TV?
No.
No?
No.
Not a fan?
No, I really, no.
What's your favorite TV show?
I like...
Modern Family?
Oh, I love Modern Family.
I
love
it.
Modern Family. In fact, all those shows on, I think it's, Wednesday night?
Mm-hmm.
In a row, those three shows are really good. But there's one on now, TNT, what is it, Maxwell and...
The King and Maxwell? Or
King and Maxwell. King and Maxwell.
Uh-huh.
Really well done.
Okay.
And based on a Baldacci book. And it's really, really good characters and fun. I love watching
them. Have you called them up to go do an episode?
No.
What do you want to do next? What is there a show on television where you'd want to play a part right now?
Oh, gosh. I guess any of them.
Yeah.
Any of them, if the part was right, you know, if it was...
You'd be great on Modern Family. That'd be so fun. We should make that happen.
They're
That's
adorable.
Cool.
I think they all have mothers now, though, don't they?
Oh, there's something. There's always something. You know, I wanted to ask you, too, if they were to make an I Dream of Jeannie movie, who do you think should be cast?
Even if I had a favorite, I would not tell you.
No.
Because it would be mean. You know, you can't do that.
Have you thought about it, though?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've thought about it.
Interesting.
But there is one person that I think would be just great in it, because she has that comedy sense about her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's just not a pretty person statue, you know.
Yeah. But she could do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. We're almost at the finish line.
Good. It's time.
When I say
time,
a name,
time.
This is going to be fast.
Oh, well,
we're going to finish it fast.
I don't do fast.
When I say a name, tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Marilyn Monroe.
Fabulous.
Elvis Presley.
Darling.
Larry Hagman.
Smart.
Your mom.
Oh. The world.
Michael.
Strong.
Your son, Matthew.
Loving.
Jeannie.
Dickens.
Barbara Eden.
I don't know who she is. I don't know who she is.
If there is one word to describe how the world should remember you, what do you think it should be?
Oh, no, don't do that to me.
No?
Ah, no.
In your fantasy of fantasies, what would you
no,
want? Or what
I
would you
know.
Want your legacy to be?
I'll be gone. I don't care what they...
You don't care? No.
I don't know.
Hardworking, strong.
No, I hope I gave pleasure to some people through my work. That's what I would hope.
Well, you did more than that, that's for
yeah.
sure. You did so many USO tours, and I
watched every episode of your show, loved it. I've seen a lot of your work, in fact, not just I Dream of Jeannie, obviously.
Thank you.
And like I said, as a woman, I feel like I've learned so much from you in your book, and I hope to continue learning from you because I think that you have so much to share. And
uh-oh.
Yes.
I better be careful.
Oh, my lips are sealed. I'm a soldier.
I have to toe the line then.
But I thank you so much, obviously, for coming and chatting with us and telling
my
us all
pleasure,
these great stories.
Pleasure.
And I hope we can do it again.
I hope so.
At some point. And we're going to have to call Modern Family.
Yes.
Because I think that you could do such a great, great role on there. Thank you so much.
It's a deal.
All right. For more of my time with Barbara, please go to conversationswithmaria.com.
From executive producers Kevin Undergaro, Maria Menounos, and the entire Conversations staff, we would like to thank you for listening to Conversations with Maria Menounos. To post comments or questions, be sure to visit conversationswithmaria.com or tweet at Maria Menounos, hashtag Conversations with Maria. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of Underman Omega Girl Productions.